Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 11th, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, coming to you this week, poolside, at Stately Long Manor. Last night, Chris, our boy kitty, Draper, who we like to call Superman because he does this thing where he stretches out like he's a Superman flying the speed of a train.
Yeah, yeah.
Last night he decided he preferred to be called Aquaman.
Oh, no!
Took a dip in the pool.
Oh, my God.
Amazingly got himself out of the pool all by himself. I was out taking the trash out. I came in. My in-laws were laughing their asses off. And I'm like, what happened? And I'm like, oh, the cat fell in the pool. I'm like, the cat fell in the pool? Is it still in there? I'm like, no, he got out. How did he get out? I don't know. Oh, my gosh.
Man.
So the wife put her foot down and said that I have to either keep the cats inside or I have to supervise them now. So I'm trying really hard to raise free-range kitties here. So I'm forced to do the show outdoor on this absolutely gorgeous 80-degree sunny Florida day. So our listeners out there, I hope you don't mind the ambient noise of birds chirping and squirrels running across the pool screen and the occasional feline belly flop.
And for those of you who don't know, we tape on November 10th because we know that tomorrow is 11-11-11 and, like, hellfire is supposed to rain down from the sky. So this is why Scott is allowed to be outside today, because if we did it tomorrow, we might lose our favorite PokerCast host. So, and this is why I have turtles, by the way, Scott. So if they fall into the pool, it's okay because they're turtles, not cats.
You probably worry more when they fall out of the water, right?
Yes, exactly.
We're going to get it back in.
Well, I'm actually pretty tired today still because I actually chose to stay up pretty late and watch the World Series of Poker main event final table. I watched as much as I possibly could, and
Did you make it to the end?
I try. Actually, here's what happened, okay? It was like 3 a.m., and I had the timer set on my TV to shut off because I was getting... And right before the TV shut off, I heard them say who won, and I kind of woke up and turned around. My eyes are kind of blurry, and I kind of saw it. But I watched most of it, but I just couldn't stay up. I couldn't stay up late enough. And I think that it has a lot to do with setting the clocks back to normal time, standard time, whatever. I think I just couldn't do it. I couldn't stay up any later. I was exhausted, and it was a shame because it was pretty damn exciting. I could not believe – how great it was live like that. And I kept thinking, are we going to have, like, the regular cast with the backstories and everything? And no, they went with the live stuff. And, again, it was just as good as it was before. And I really think they found something here. It's not boring. I mean, it's just not boring. I thought it would be, but it's not. It's really good.
Well, that's good to hear. And a couple things that I think are great about this. One, a previous shows when we have a new world champion, we've always had to say spoiler alert, because some people might be wanting to wait until it comes out. Even the last year is a day off, and remember, gosh, a couple years ago you waited 4 years before you found out who the champion was. Now, if you don't know who the world champion is, it's your own fault, right?
Yeah.
Because you would know 15 minutes after the people that were actually there watching. So there's really no excuse not to, hey, I want to watch, So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, what else, too, is it, with this November 9, it's you only have to wait a day or even whatever to find out. Where in the old days, the winner was declared in July, but they didn't show it until November. So it was like, that's what was really difficult about it. But at least this one, okay, there's only 9 guys left and there's only 2 days and you'll find out. So anyway, let's spill the beans here. Of course, I guess it's Pius or Pius Hines. I'm not really sure because
you're the one that watched TV. I didn't see.
Some said both. Well, I heard it both ways. So I think it's. I would say Pius. So it's Pius Hines, 22 years old. My God, again another freaking, you know, just kid winning this thing. He's from Cologne, Germany. First German champion ever, and he beat Martin Stasko from the Czech Republic. After Ben Lamb was eliminated on the fourth hand. It was literally like four hands in, and it was a race, and he lost it. And I think the over-under on Lon McCarron using the check from a check line was like 8 minutes.
Gosh.
But no, I think he waited a while to use it. I think he waited till the heads up, but it did come out. We have a check from the check. That line did get uttered. but it was really captivating.
Was Ben sacrificed like a lamb?
Yes. You know what was interesting? They kept talking about Stasko as a math guy because, you know, he was. That's how he plays the game. He plays it statistically and everything. But I have never seen someone bluff and get someone off a better hand as much as this guy did when he was heads up with Hines. It was remarkable. And, you know, Hines, to his credit, you know, had the chip lead, was real aggressive, then lost it. These guys changed the leads probably like 8 or 9 times heads up, and it was like, you know, 140 to, you know, 60 and you know, million chips and then whatever.
Yeah.
So it was really a real remarkable heads up deal, and every time you thought, okay, they're going to get it in pretty soon because the blinds are like 1 in 2 million with it, you know, it was brutal, and I really thought they kept coming back. These guys would not give up. They changed leads a lot, and it wasn't even so much that they were heads up with the same amount of chips. It would be like 140 to 60 and then 130 to 70. I mean, and then they just kept going back and forth. It was really impressive. These guys were really good. But I could not believe how much Stasko bluffed. It was remarkable.
Yeah, you know, I heard about that from, I was just busy with a bunch of stuff and I didn't get a chance to watch it. And I didn't think I was going to enjoy watching it on tape delay after I heard it won, so I didn't watch. But, you know, the people on our forum at neumagazine.com/forum. Raved about it. Lots of people on my Facebook feed were raving about it. You know, I did the Short Stack radio show last night. They said it was captivating as well too. So I certainly don't. Amazingly to me, and maybe not as amazingly, but I have not heard one negative comment about how ESPN handled it this year.
Oh, we'll just wait till this show's over. You'll hear a couple, but no, I'm absolutely kidding.
No,
I'm absolutely
and I'm sure
kidding.
There are, but I mean it's. You know, it's like you go to like a Five Guys Burgers, and everybody tells you it's great. And you go in there, and you have the burger, and it's great, and the fries are great. And then you walk out, and you're like, you know, maybe the fries weren't as good as it could be. But you don't go tell your friend that.
Yeah.
You go, hey, it's amazing,
yeah.
And you kind of forget about the stuff. So I'm not saying this probably that people don't have complaints, but I think it's a real good sign that that ESPN did a good job with it. And back to the actual poker, which is probably more important. You know, that's great. If people are going to be able to watch it and more people are going to watch it and really enjoy it and seeing, you know, these guys bluff and the leads change, it's turning it into a true spectator sport now.
And I really have to have, and we've said this before about the other live coverage, so, you know, forgive me for being, you know, repetitive. But, you know, Lon McCarron and Antonio Esfandiari and Norman Chad are sitting in that booth and they got to, you know, they have to fill time. I mean,
right.
When you got a guy sitting there thinking for 5 minutes, you can't edit that down, and you can't, you know, you can't just sit there and let it be dead air. You got stuff to talk about, and whether they're repetitive or not, I think they did a really excellent job of just of making it seem like there's something to talk about, something of importance here, and they weren't repetitive so to the fact that you're like, okay, we heard you say this 100 times, Antonio. It wasn't like that, and he was on a lot. Like, in other words, when he put them on hands, he got a lot of them right. He got a lot wrong too. But then he was real, you know, humble about it, you know, or whatever. He was gracious and, you know, said, hey, you know, I can't get everything right, you know, what, you know, because they would show the hand, you know, once they folded, they would show the cards, what
yeah.
they had.
Okay.
And it was really cool. I mean, it was an excellent, I thought it was an excellent job by these guys. Norman Chad doesn't talk as much when it's live because he can't write his jokes out and
right,
think, you know
yeah.
what I mean? So he's funny when he does talk, but you can tell he's got these things waiting to use them when they come out. You know, because he's got, there's not much time for him to talk between Lon being the straight man and the analyst talking. you know, Norman Chad's got to just like throw in his funny one-liners every once in a while,
yeah,
or ask questions.
It's probably gonna be like Dennis Miller on the Monday Night Football.
Yes, right? Exactly. That's a great,
you know,
great example.
He's got good stuff to say. He's funny, but it's just it's probably one too many people.
Yep, exactly. That's a great analogy. And you know, one thing I wanted to say was, you know, you and I are we get some, you know, privileged information that they send us, like press releases and photos and stuff.
Yeah.
And so the night before the final three, which I thought also kind of is interesting that they went to final three rather than final two.
Yeah.
But anyway, the night before the final three, I didn't get to watch it to the end. Again, I was, you know, I was pretty exhausted or whatever, and I just didn't watch it all or whatever. So I had no idea who the final three were, but we get the email the next morning. I looked at it, and the email comes in from the press release. And this
is the same thing.
It's the God's honest truth. It says, final three of the World Series are Ben Lamb, Martin Stasko, and Pius Hines. And it said, and Lamb has 55,000 chips, and Stasko has 42,000 chips, and Pius Hines has 107 million. And I said, oh, my God. Why did they – first of all, why are they delaying it a day to make these guys come back to put in just the anti-chips to lose to this Pius Hines guy? Why did they delay it a day or two or whatever it was? Why didn't they just play it out? And I'm like, oh, my God. What the hell happened that these guys have – I said, how does somebody have 42,000 chips? So I'm like, something's wrong. It's got to be. So then I looked at the actual stats. And, yeah, of course, it was 55 million and 42 million.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But then people were resending, like, within the World Series. They were resending these press releases. So nobody caught this thing, this mistake. And it was hilarious. I'm like, how did that happen? Oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, because I logged in and I saw it. And, again, I haven't watched any of it. I haven't watched the single hand of it. And I'm like, oh, great. Let me see what's happening. And that's the first thing I saw. I'm like, wow. And then I started thinking, this is going to be amazing TV. I'm going to have to watch tonight. These guys, you got one big blind left against this guy. And then I went, wow, it happened. And then so then I started thinking, I'm like, well, what are the blinds? And if they got somebody's got 107 million of blinds, it has to be more than 50,000 or
yeah.
something, right? So then that's when I started to look at the blinds. I'm like, that's not right. And then you go down a little bit farther. I'm like, oh, okay, good. I'm like, and, you know, hey, I feel for Seth Polansky or whoever put out the press release because, you know, in this business, we all make mistakes. And even though with a gazillion eyes on it, sometimes stuff like that gets through. So,
oh, yeah, no, and I just thought it was kind of funny.
Not making fun of them at all, but, I mean, you could just imagine the reaction to somebody like, you know, the two of us that live and breathe poker now and to see something that amazing in a press release and then go, oh, okay, fine.
You know, and even the other thing, too, is it could have been 5.5 and 4.2 million, which then you would say it's still over, you know what I mean? But the 55 and 42 clearly is enough chips to compete. So, you know, I wasn't sure if it was a decimal point missing or what it was, but it was pretty funny. But, yeah, no, I was glad I watched. I really went into it thinking, you know, I haven't watched leading up to it because I know everything that was going on to the final nine, and I just don't really care too much about the backstories anymore. And the 1 or 2 weeks I did watch these sort of Tuesday, you know, dramatic showings of the stuff, I really did remember a lot of the hands. Even though it was months ago, I did remember a lot of the hands that I saw live, so I thought, I'm just not going to watch it. So I stopped watching that until this. So I felt obligated to watch the live stuff as much as I could, and it was really good. I mean, I was really pleased with it. I'm glad I watched it. I wish I could have stayed up for the whole thing. I just couldn't do it. You know, when Lee was at the final table that time,
yeah.
You know, I had my little laptop computer next to me or whatever it was I had, and I literally just... I had one eye open. I forced myself with toothpicks to keep my eyes open to watch to see if these guys were who's going to win, and I watched it to the end. But this, I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. I didn't know anybody at the final table, so I couldn't do it.
Well, a couple things about our champion that I want to talk about. One, seriously, is anybody older than 22 ever going to win this thing ever again? I mean, it's really crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, this Dasko guy did everything he could to win. He would have been 35 and. There was a chance where, you know, I really thought he was going to win, and it didn't happen. But, yeah, I know. It's remarkable. It's funny, too, because if Kata and what's the other guy?
Eastgate.
If they didn't break the record, I mean, it would have been broken. You know what I mean? You look for how long that record stood, and it's been broke. It would have been broken 3 times now. You know, it's remarkable.
Yeah, even if somebody's like 27 or something, I wouldn't make a big deal. But, I mean, these guys are 21, 22.
I know. And I have, in my life, I have 22 and 21-year-old people in my family.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is no way those people could do what these guys are doing. I mean, it's remarkable that they have this capacity for pressure and a skill game like this.
All right, and the other thing, too, an epiphany I have today, and I'm stealing your word because you're using that in the next bit we're going to be talking about, but this is how we do things here. I try to steal from you.
Yes, I know.
I did the Short Stack radio interview like I do every Wednesday on Short Stack Radio, and Mark Hoke, the host, asked me about endorsement contracts after Black Friday and where that money's going now, and he was bringing up the fact that there were a couple interesting patches on American players. They weren't obviously online rooms. They were like products. And you watched, I didn't, but it sounded like some kind of glasses or something on Giannotti or something like that. I was explaining that, that money doesn't exist anymore. You know, when Black Friday died, that money kind of died with it. And people are going to find endorsement contracts, but they're not going to be as rich as they were before. And, for example, like a Jax Lynx, obviously the give Caesars credit for bringing them into the whole World Series thing, but they're not going to be able to shower a world champion with the kind of money that Poker Stars would, because, you get different core audiences. You know,
yeah.
Poker Stars, your core audience is poker players, so you can bring that guy to, hey, come play with the world, play poker with the world champion, and the core audience is poker players are going to be, oh, that's great. But you know, Jax Lynx can't go to the core audience and go, hey, come eat beef jerky with a world champion. Like, oh man, honey, I gotta get on a plane. I gotta have the teriyaki strips with Pius. It doesn't translate the same way, right?
Right.
So it made me think. I woke up this morning and I was like, you know what? I think it's really good until U.S. Finally gets their head out of the sand and regulates online poker that players outside the United States win the World Series, and I'm certainly not trying to keep myself from winning. If I get lucky enough to make it, or you, or anybody else, I mean, I'd be happy for an American to win. I was, rooting for Ben Lamb here. I mean, it's just like the Olympics. I don't think there's anything wrong with Americans rooting for Americans, just like Germans were rooting for Germans, and Czechs were rooting for Czechs. Here's the thing: is what would if Ben Lamb or Giannotti won? What endorsement contract are they going to get? Poker Stars is not going to sponsor them. They're not going to get anything out of them, right?
Well,
they are going to get something out of Pius. And I think because of that, that money is going to flow into the poker economy. It's going to get Germans more excited about poker than they are now. And that's eventually going to help the overall poker economy. Right now, I don't think... unfortunately, an American winning is really going to help poker too much. Am I wrong?
No. Well, I know what you're saying. And before I forget, too, when it got heads up, Hines and Stasko, both of them had nothing on. They had no logos.
Okay.
I know that Hines had a shirt that said Boss on it, but it was embroidered. So I don't know if Boss gave him money to wear that shirt. Wheeling Island kind of gave, a Moon some, a shirt to wear or whatever, but he didn't get paid for that. I know what you're saying, and I think I get the idea that he can promote poker over there at least, and can visit him over there and stuff. One thing is that I know Ben Lamb has a deal with Aria, and he wore an Aria shirt the whole time, and I think he had an Aria, I don't know if he wore an Aria hat before, but he had an Aria shirt. So he has a deal with them for their room, so maybe if he won, Aria would kind of do stuff with him to get people to come play with him in their room, play with the world champion. So it's on a lesser scale, but there's no way they could shower the kind of money put him on tour and stuff like
exactly. Sars, I guess that's my point, is that there are people that are going to sponsor these folks. I mean, and there's money out there. I wouldn't turn down an endorsement contract from Aria if I was on TV, but it's certainly not the level of money that a poker star is.
Right.
Or party poker or something like that could shower on someone, and really, I mean, again, America is such a fractured country anyhow. We got so many interests over here. I'm not saying that other countries don't, but Stars could make, and I think Stars signed Hines before he won. I could be wrong.
Oh, okay.
But they could make him a star in Germany, where I don't think anybody can make an American a star in America now, where Stars could be four.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Or somebody else. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. I wonder, too, I wonder if, and this is totally off track here, but if when the, let's say the poker does get regulated here, and clearly, to use a Gundam word, the brick and mortar rooms are going to have these online rooms lined up. They're ready to go. Most of them are already got stuff going. So I wonder if they're going to do the same kinds of things that PokerStars and Full Tilt and those guys did for their players and start to send them around the country with their logos on, or if they're going to be like, you know what, you know, we're big enough already. We have poker rooms and casinos in every state in the union practically, and we don't need somebody to, we don't need to pay a Ben Lamb to, or whoever to play, you know, and to tour the tours for us and everything. I wonder if they'll do that, or if they'll just be like, you know what, we're just going to have a poker site. We're going to have the best poker site we can, and you're going to play on it or you're not. You know, I wonder if they're going to shower the players with the sponsorship deals like that, or if it's just going to, it probably are, but I just wonder to the extent that they're going to do it.
Case by case basis. I mean, some probably won't, some will, but I mean, but I think the point that I think makes a big difference is the amount of money.
Yeah.
I mean, when that online poker is just such a money generator, you know, to the point that, that Stars and Full Tilt and Ultimate Bet, all those companies spend a good chunk of their revenue every year on advertising and marketing.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, you know, magazines or affiliate deals or endorsement contracts. So, you know, when you have that kind of money, it's going to be such a competitive market. You know, even though the big companies are really trying to keep the market pretty small behind the scenes, it's still going to be such a competitive market that I think it's kind of like, you know, cell phones. I mean, you open a newspaper or anything like that, I mean, it's 47 pages of cell phone ads. You know, those companies just, that's just part of the cost of business is spending a lot of their revenue on trying to steal people. So, I do think you're going to see a lot of that. And let's not forget, too, I think people still are somewhat starstruck.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think advertising, hey, you got a world champion coming to your room, the people are going to come out and want to see them. Though, interestingly, I was at, in the Indiana last week for that Deep Stacks event, and I don't know, I can't remember whether I mentioned this on the show, but I did think it was interesting that we had so many top pros there, Madison and Reem and Katrina Jett and Grinder, and obviously the people that were in the tournament loved it, and were sitting there talking to them, having photo staking and stuff like that. But the rest of the people in the room didn't really crane their heads much. To look at them, or it just didn't seem like they really, I don't know if they didn't realize they're there, or maybe they just said, you know what, hey, I don't need to get, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over them. So maybe the star thing is waning a little bit. I don't know. But
Maybe they're just all the same people that you met in line at the car rental place, and they just they don't want to have them in their house or in their poker room. You know, I don't know. And it's funny you mentioned how much money that all these online poker sites make. You know, I mean, hey, it's pretty impossible to screw that up, isn't it? Oh, no, wait.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. I guess you could make billions of dollars and screw it up somehow.
It's kind of like that Joe Pesci line at the beginning of Casino.
That's
this
right.
This is a story how we had the entire city in our pocket and how we screwed it all up.
Well, you know, you mentioned the star quality, and I got to mention this. I mentioned the turtles before, right? I have turtles, so now I've been working on getting them a bigger tank, and I got them a bigger tank, and they're all happy now. They got a place to swim and whatever. And but I had to go to like Home Depot to get something the other day, and I didn't shower yet. I'd woken up, but I wanted to go, and I was like, all right, you know, I'm just gonna throw on a sweatshirt and shorts and just my hat on backwards, and go down to the Home Depot, and then go to, you know, the pet store, and then I'll come right back and do what I got to do. So, you know, that was one of the days where it was kind of chilly. Now it's nice and 80 again and balmy, but it was like 50 or so that day, or 60. So I was like, I'll get a sweatshirt. So I grab a sweatshirt out of my wardrobe or whatever, put it on, throw on my hat, run out of the store, get down to the Home Depot, and I walk through the front door, and I remembered that I had on my What Would Brunson Do sweatshirt, all right, which my mom bought me for Christmas years ago, and I hadn't worn it in a while. So as I'm walking in, there's a guy in the return line, and it's a long line, which shocked me. I felt like it was the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
But it was Home Depot, you know what I mean? But it was a long line. It was like 8 or 9 people for returns, which is just sick. So anyway, I'm walking in, and there's a guy there. He's got bleached blonde hair, long. He had to be 60 or so, okay? Kind of he had on like a white silk shirt that was buttoned down past his solar plexus. open button. So like you can see his whole chest hanging out. And then he had a paisley scarf on with gold and blue, and it was around his neck. Okay, so this guy was dressed like a pirate, or so I don't know what it was, but I mean, I was like, Halloween was a few weeks ago, buddy. You know. But anyway, I mean, this guy looked hilarious. So anyway, I'm walking past, and I'm when I go to the store, I'm like every other guy. I'm like geometry. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. I'm going right to where I need to go. I'm going there as fast as I can. I'm already dressed like a bum. I just want to get the hell out of there and get back home and do what I got to do. So I start to walk by, and this guy goes, hey, I know what Brunson would do. And I'm like, what? And so I turn around. I'm kind of walking still backwards because I really don't want to talk to this stranger dressed like a pirate who I think wants to try to ask me if I want to buy some L'Oreal bleach products or something. So I'm like, what? And so now he started this sort of I want to be in two places at once dance where he doesn't want to lose his spot in line, but he wants to tell me his joke so bad that he doesn't want to miss both opportunities. So he starts this sort of like, you know, when you were little and or maybe you're, you know, maybe Albert Pujols and you're caught in between a hot box. You know, they used to call it that where you have to go back and forth and you got him in a rundown and you're going back and forth and the guys are throwing the ball back and forth trying to get you out. It was the same thing. This guy was running from the line to me to the line to me, and he had like his hands out on both ways, like left and right, hoping that he could run to one side and keep his line and then run back to me and tell me the story and then run back to the line. And he kept going back and forth, and I'm walking further and further away from this guy. So it's getting harder and harder for him to tell me his story because I don't know this stranger. You know, I mean, I don't want to. So finally he's like, I know what Brunson would do. So I thought he like was a poker guy. I thought he knew what poker was. And he says, if I were Brunson, I would get a shirt that said, damn. And it would say, drugs against mad mothers. Ha, ha, ha. I was like, what? What the hell was that? So clearly he saw the four letters on my chest, was thinking of the mad slogan, mothers against drunk driving. And then he said, or mothers against drugs, or whatever the hell, you know, whatever they want to call it. And he thought that's, because I had the four letters on my chest, that he thought it should say, drugs against mad mothers, or drunks against. Gosh. And I'm like, do you even know who Brunson is? And he's like, no. I'm like, all right, buddy, thanks a lot. Thanks for taking, that's 5 minutes out of my life I'll never get back. So I'm like, that is just incredible. So, you know, you got to remember what you're wearing when you're out in public, you know? Yeah. So maybe I won't ever wear that shirt again. So anyway, that's not the end of the story. So I go, from there I go to the pet store, and I'm looking at a filter for this tank I bought. And a guy comes up to me and he's like, you want any help or whatever? And I'm like, well, so I start asking some questions about the filter and everything. And when I stand up, he looks at my hat, and I have it on backwards. And he says, hey, are you playing in that charity event tonight? And I was like, no. So I forgot that I have this shirt on, the hat on, that says poker on it, you know. And actually, the hat I had on was a Full Tilt poker hat, believe it or not, which I thought was hilarious.
That's not true.
Well, remember when I broke it out for the home game with Frank? Yeah, so I had the stack in the house, so I grabbed one because, like I said, I went into the closet to get my shirt, and I was like, I need to throw a hat on, so I just grabbed one and threw it on because my hair was a mess. So I forgot I had a Full Tilt hat on backwards. So the guy starts talking about poker, and he says, yeah, I haven't played poker online for years. And I'm like, oh, really? Well, because of the Black Friday? And he's like, no, I stopped a long time ago when Full Tilt credited my account $2,000 because they said someone was cheating against me. So I took the money and ran.
Huh.
I was like, what? So as I'm talking to this guy, I'm trying to extract some information from him about what happened and how much he plays. And so I'm actually asking him questions that I sincerely don't know the answers to because I'm curious. I'm a journalist. That's what I do. I'm curious. So I ask questions to find out information about this guy. And it turns out that he plays locally and, you know, he plays down at Derby Lane. He heard of our magazine and thought I looked familiar, so maybe he actually did hear the magazine and read it, whatever. So I'm talking to him, and then I started wondering about, you know, interviewing people, and I wondered how poker players, because, you know, you and I, when we have to, as journalists, have to interview these people, we do our research, right? I mean, we find out like when you do the ones for the, you know, like the lawyer and the political kinds of conversations, you know, you have a political background, you know about that stuff, so you do your research and you ask, you prepare questions for them because you have to have an interesting interview. And then when I do like a lot of the poker players and stuff, I'll know about them, I'll know how many things they've won and everything. So I had this epiphany, which now sounds like I'm using your word, but I actually
you stole it from
I was going to use it first. I wondered if we should make like a sacrificial lamb of one of these poker pros and have fun with them once. And instead of making an educated interview where we know everything we're going to ask them because we know about them and we know their history, we try to drive them crazy and make it like a job interview where we don't know anything about them at all, and do it with like Phil Hellmuth, who has the hugest ego in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And wonder how he would react to a question like, So, this World Series thing, have you ever won one of these bracelets? And just see how long he actually stays on the show. You know, so, this Hold'em game, now, can that be played with, you know, with, like, wild cards? And I mean, just ask him questions where we seem like we're totally clueless and like a job interview. Like, so, have you ever been sponsored by any of these online poker rooms? And what's that online poker? You know, just these weird questions. I would love to see what these guys would act like if we had to do like a job interview. Because there's two different kinds of interviews. There's interviews where you sincerely don't know anything about somebody and you need to ask them raw questions. And then these sort of interviews where you have to extract information that you wouldn't know what to ask unless you did research first. And that's what we always do.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to do that. We should do that.
Makes me think of the old Chris Farley bit on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Not quite the same. He's just, you know, smitten. Wow. You were in that movie, right? That's great.
That was awesome.
That's really cool. But, you know, I'm trying to remember. Was the situation very similar to, remember that Negreanu where he threw the guy in the lake over in France or something that people thought might have been made up and stuff. I don't know, but I mean, it kind of rings like that too. That was
a fake interview, and what the guy did was he tried to piss him off by telling him he played bad and stuff like that. But it was the same kind of thing where he was trying to elicit a reaction from him. But I just think that, you know, he hears Ante Up PokerCast been around for 7 years, Ante Up Magazine been around for almost four now. And, you know, he's going to say, oh, I'm going to assume these guys know what they're doing, so I'll agree to do an interview, get them on the show, and then you're like, so, you know, poker, you know, is it like Setback? Do you have to make tricks? And, I mean, just ask him all these stupid questions because you just, you know, I wonder how long he would stay on the interview with us, you know. We should really sacrifice one of those interviews and just really just blow our reputation and all our credibility just for that one brief laugh.
Yes, because that would be worth it.
Or we can just have, as you know, we'll have a start an imprint second publication that we can do these interviews under.
Anti down.
All right. Well, we spent way too much time on all that, but the bottom line, the moral of the story is: be careful what you wear, because you might be forced to have conversations you don't want to have.
Well, folks should take that advice to heart if they come on one of our Ante Up poker cruises. And of course, we've been pimping this New Orleans one that's sailing next month, still getting people booked for that one. It's crazy to me how poker players wait to the last minute, and one of the funnier things is I'm on the public art committee here in Safety Harbor where I live, and we have a big grant proposal out for artists, and the deadline is like in 3 days, and we have no submissions.
Oh, no.
On Friday. And now we're up to 10 today. And I'm like, you know, I meant to mention the other people in the art committee. I'm like, it's nice to see that artists are exactly like poker players. They wait to the last minute.
Jeez.
But no, we're still booking a lot of people. And very excited with the amount of podcast listeners coming this time. Poker Geek is his first time ever on a cruise ship. Excited to have him. Thitsa, who's been trying to get on her cruise for a while, she's coming now. Bit Guru, who's been on before, he's coming back. It's killing me, but we have another banana winner coming. I know his real name, but I don't want to put that on the show. I forget his Ante Up name. But we have a lot of podcast listeners coming, so I'm looking forward to having a lot of folks on this New Orleans cruise. So if people want to join us for that, that's we'd still love to have you, and we still got time to get you on.
Warms my heart, buddy.
Yeah, and you know, they were all hoping to meet you as well too, and now you're disappointing them by, you know, being responsible and working on the magazine on deadline.
I apologize. I will try to make as many if I can next year, but yeah, it's just it's impossible time of year for me to do it.
Well, it's going to be a financial hit for you too, by the way, because you know your bit on these cruises is to get up there and say, "Hey, you can tell me the bad beat story as long as you give me a dollar. I'm going to undercut you this time. I'm going to do it for 75 cents." And when you get on the next cruise in March, you're going to have to undercut me. So it works.
You know, I made a dollar on the last one, by the way. That was it. The one before I made like seven, but this one I made $1. That was kind of depressing. So yeah, good luck with that. Good luck trying to get a 75-cent chip out of somebody, too.
All right, well, that was a big setup for what we're really excited to announce is we finally settled on our 2012 cruise schedule. Folks can go to anteupmagazine.com/cruise for a lot more details on all these, and we'll be adding even more details in the coming weeks and months. Obviously, we'll be talking to Lee Child, see what cruises he wants to come back on, and working with some other partners and trying to add some value to these cruises, but for right now, we'll let you know when the dates are, and we are taking bookings now. So, as we mentioned, the first one next year will be March 17th. It's going to be on the Jewel of the Seas. It's out of our home port of Tampa again.
Yes.
We have to drive the truck 20 miles now instead of 4,000. And we'll be going to Cozumel and Costa Maya.
Costa Maya.
Our first time going there, so I'm excited about that. So it's a 5-night cruise. And rates for that are going to start at $579, and to get that rate, you need to book by January 3rd. So, you know, if you haven't bought an iPod yet for the family, or an iPad, I guess. Yeah. It's probably more expensive, right?
Yeah, iPad.
You can buy a cruise now. Makes a great holiday gift, wasn't it?
Absolutely a good holiday gift. Hey, honey, here's what we're doing for Christmas. We're going to go on vacation in 3 months. Let's instead of just wearing another sweater and some necklace I was going to buy you, why don't we give ourselves a vacation? Great idea.
So it's going to be a lot of fun to sail out of Tampa again. You know, our first two cruises were out of Tampa, right? And then we started moving around elsewhere in Florida, and then, of course, the New Orleans thing coming up. So, it's going to be a lot more fun to sail out of Tampa.
Yeah, there's just something, too, the security-wise, too. I just feel so much better about, you know, like we get to the ship, and we're like, oh, no, we forgot something. We can go back and get it.
Yeah.
And they get back to, when you go to New Orleans, you're screwed, buddy.
Yep.
You know, if you forget something, so don't forget anything. But, it's going to be fun to go out of Tampa. What'd you say?
I have to go to Home Depot and not wear my hat. And then our second cruise of the year will be August 27th on the Monarch of the Seas. We'll be sailing from Port Canaveral, Florida, going to Nassau and Coco Cay, Royal Caribbean's private island again. We've been doing this one almost every year, and it's what we call our budget cruise.
Yes.
It's 4 nights long, only $369, which, by the way, is the same price we charged this year, so no price increase for that.
Despite gas prices always going up, we stay the same on that one.
Absolutely. You need to book by June 15th to get that one. So if you're looking to save a little money, that would be the cruise you want to go on. And then very exciting for the last one of the year, November 10th, the Enchantment of the Seas out of Baltimore, Maryland. It's going to go by Nassau and Coco Cay in Bahamas, but also it's going to make a pretty long stop in Port Canaveral, Florida, which is interesting because that's where we're sailing out of on the first one. But this one, you'll actually be able to get off in Florida and, you know, go to the Kennedy Space Center. In fact, actually, I think if you really want to, you could probably make it over to Orlando, go to a theme park for a couple hours, and get back on if you really want to. But sailing out of Baltimore for the first time, hoping we can, attract some folks that don't want to fly and be able to drive in from, you know, Delaware and New Jersey, Pennsylvania, all those states up there.
You know, and it's funny too because I was sitting around thinking, you know, how can we avoid having to drive those damn tables all the way to Baltimore? And I was like, well, you know, we could always just go over to Port Canaveral and load them there when they get there. But then I was like, yeah, but they're not going to stop at Port Canaveral on the way back, so we're kind of screwed. Then we'll have them in Baltimore with no way to get home. So, but it was a good idea for about a millisecond.
But that one's going to be $599, which is a great deal for a 7-night cruise, $599. And you need to book by August 31st to take advantage of that one. But that's our schedule for next year. And, you know, folks that want to go out of New Orleans and can't make the next one, we're hopeful to do one of those probably early 2013 and try to keep mixing it up a little bit. And some exciting stuff happening in the Royal Caribbean in 2013, too. So some new ships and some new ports, so we're going to be looking forward to doing that schedule as well, too. But we got a great schedule for next year, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, everything's going to be variety now. So, you know, you start to worry about that too. You wonder, you know, are our port stops being stagnant and people not coming on because they've already been there? But, you know, a lot of our turnover too is we usually get a lot of, you know, a lot of new people on every cruise. So I don't think that's a problem. But this time it's not, we're going to have it solved for us because they're going to give us new ships and new ports. So we're pretty excited.
Yep.
Hey, you know, we don't have time for a hotline today, so we're not going to use one. But if you want to call us, it's 813-448-1120. And if you call it and we use it, we'll give you something from our swag shelf, like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com. Don't forget, 813-448-1120. But we do have time for a mailbag.
Yep.
And okay. Drew from Massachusetts emailed this to me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. He emailed it to you.
Yeah.
Almost everybody either emails it to both of us or just me.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to send you a message.
I'm feeling a little slighted here that that Drew is going against the stream here, like a salmon.
Trying to send you a message, buddy.
And cutting me out of the conversation, but I was too smart. I figured it out.
That's why.
Because you copied me on the reply.
I forwarded it. Yeah, I sort of forwarded it to you. Yeah, so, I guess I'll read it. He says, I'd like to share a situation I was in this past summer at Mohegan Sun Connecticut Poker Room, which is probably why he forwarded it to me, because he knows I'm from there.
That's true, yeah. You fellow nutmeggers.
Yeah, we stick together.
Got your own little cult there.
Says he was playing 2-4 limit and hit a jack high straight flush on a turn.
Jack high!
Jack high! The high hand at the time, and it was a qualifier for the high hand jackpot, so he was pretty excited. He said, however, on the river, his only opponent folded. He said, luckily, I knew enough to show the hand to the dealer before the cards were collected. Dealer called the floor over. And then he says, I got a high hand, jack, high, straight, flush. The floor asks for the count of the pot. Dealer counted $14, and the floor said, not enough money in the pot to count toward the high hand. He said, I was so deflated. But the dealer said that the floor was wrong, that the minimum rebuy at the table was $10, so it should count, and that the floor was thinking of 4-8 limit, where the minimum rebuy was 20, and so the floor reversed the decision, so, yeah, good news. He said he was grateful for the good dealer, and that's, you know, a great, great dealer. They're always something that, you know, they should be cognizant of and stuff like that.
Looking for that tip, too.
Yeah, look for that tip, so that's good. But he says, in any case, when his high hand was announced over the intercom, one guy offered him $600 for the ticket. I had 59 minutes left before the high hand was over. What would you have done? You know, the jackpot, I think he knew the jackpot was going to be around $1,300. Maybe he knew. I think he knew. What would you do? Would you sell it and hope that, you know, it gets beat in the next 59 minutes, or keep it and hope, you know, whatever.
Whew, wow. Jack high, straight flush. That's pretty hard to beat. But 59 minutes, that's eternity. I mean, it's funny when you go to these high hands and you hit something, and particularly somebody hits, like, you know, aces full of kings or something.
Yeah.
You know, they're literally sweat coming down their brow for the next 5 minutes before it ends, because that's easy to beat.
Yeah.
Jack high, I mean, really, it's what, three hands that can beat you?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I guess, as always, when we get these things, there's missing information. We don't know how many tables were going. You know, if there's 150 tables going, then it makes a difference. If there's two tables going, it makes a difference. I'm sure it's somewhere in between.
Well, I'll give you an idea. There's only 42 tables in that room, so it can't be 150. So now you've narrowed it down already. So,
you know, 59 minutes. 600. I mean, I don't think I could sell it. I think I would free roll with it, right?
Yeah, I think that's what I said. I'm free rolling for $1,300. I realize you could
free roll. I mean, I could lose it, but I mean, I'm willing to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a free opportunity at money, rather than, you know, at more money, rather than giving it up and then losing out on $700 or whatever it was. So I think I suggested to just, hey, you know what, you want a pot? You're playing poker, and I have a free chance at $1,300 or whatever, more money than $600. I think I'll just let it go and see what happens. So he says he decided to turn down the offer, since in that same room he had been outdrawn on the high hand twice before.
Ouch.
And then he wanted to win the jackpot for at least once in his life. he said he got lucky. His hand held up, and it did turn out to be $1,300. He tipped the dealer a little extra and took his whole family out to the buffet.
The buffet?
I know, dude.
Come on, Drew. $1,300? You take the wife and the kids to the buffet? How good is the buffet at Mohegan Sun? I haven't been there. Is it really good?
I never ate it, but their food at the Mohegan Sun was good. I ate at their one of
they
their
have
restaurants.
A juice on it? I hope at least.
Come on, man, buddy.
I mean, what were you going to the Chris Cosenza School of Money Spending?
Oh, my God. Hey, you know, it could have been a nice seafood buffet or something like the Rio where it's like 20, 30 bucks.
I mean, if it's a good buffet, that's different.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure they got a steakhouse there, right?
I don't know.
$1,300 bucks, live a little.
Oh, man. So anyway, congrats on that. I'm glad it worked out. I would have done the same thing. I think I would have turned him down. And, you know, because especially if he didn't know it. You know, I think he had to know where the jackpot was at.
Yeah, you know I mean? If you knew it was 1300, then you could do a little bit more math. I mean, that's you're giving up more than 50% equity there, right?
Yeah.
On a chance, and I can't believe that there's more than a 50% chance that you're gonna your jack high straight flush is gonna lose in 59 minutes.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, there's a lot of variables involved, so I you can't make a perfect comparison with the information we have, but Yeah, I think that's tough. I mean, the jackpot is 601. Heck yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Yep.
600 and run to the counter.
Thanks, pal.
But 1300, yeah, I think I'm gonna chance it a little bit. I also think it's interesting that somebody offered to buy it from him.
Yeah, and came like running over to him. Yeah.
I've never heard that before, and you know, that guy obviously is taking more risk then because he's plunking down $600 that for something that might be worthless in 59 minutes.
Yeah.
But you know, you get enough people. I mean, you hear all these JJ Wentworth commercials on TV, right?
I want my money now.
Yeah, all kinds of people are willing to sell their annuities and lottery tickets and all that stuff for money right now rather than having to wait. And that's a completely different situation there. That's where you know you're getting the money.
Yeah.
Unless you die. Here, I mean, there's no guarantee you're getting the money. So I would think there's probably a market out there for people that are well bankrolled to make these kind of deals.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine that? Honey, I hit the high hand 14 times tonight. What? Well, I actually never hit it, but I bought 14 tickets, and they all held up. We're going to the buffet tonight. Get your Sunday best on. The Golden Corral is on our way home.
Oh, jeez.
But interesting, yeah. I mean, not to get all 1% or Occupy Wall Street here, but, you know, if you have money, it's easy to make money. I mean, seriously, you get, you know, Bill Gates can sit there all day and buy those all day.
Yeah, okay.
What's it going to hurt him?
That's pretty funny.
But you and I, we're not going to be offering $600 to somebody for their high hand ticket, are we?
No, maybe $6.
$6, yeah. All right, well, great hand, Drew. I appreciate you letting me crack on you for going to the buffet. But we are going to send you an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. You can win only the uncut sheets, but you can buy the cards in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com. But right now, for the next 36 seconds, Drew, if you want to let us buy that uncut sheet back for $20, let us know.
We can also give them, you know, an actual deck of the J-Design cards. That way, it's sort of like giving them something that's similar to the actual product, which is valuable, more valuable than the...
That's true.
I don't know. But, you know, you brought up the store. Don't forget, we got a bunch of Anti-Up logo items there, too, and a dozen of other poker products that make great holiday gifts.
And don't forget our new state pages. Go to antiupmagazine.com, and on the right-hand side, go down to your state-by-state pages, and go to our Where to Play section for links to all the poker rooms and state-by-state maps.
And finally, we have two ambassadors we still need. Someone to cover Ohio, because they're going to be opening their poker rooms all next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone in the Pacific Northwest. You know, Scott and I can't be on the phone all the time with people in Seattle. We need someone to be up there seeing how things are going for us. So if you guys want to do it, want to apply for those positions, antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors.
And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And our Twitter followers are quickly catching up to our Facebook likers.
Wow.
Likers? I guess that's what you'd say.
Right? I guess.
Twitter followers and Facebook. If you like on Facebook, you have to be a liker.
Liker.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what's going on the news desk this week.
Even Greg Raymer couldn't convince a Virginia judge that poker should be allowed to be played again in Portsmouth. The former world champ was a star witness in a poker room's case to have charity games, which were shut down in 2010, permitted again. The judge ruled against the motion. No, no. No more poker.
Yeah, and it's sad because just once we need a poker playing judge like they do on, you know, Rounders. You know, why can't these judges all play poker and understand it? You know, because clearly that's what it was. The guy's still thinking, it's still a chance to the final outcome. I read that story, and you know, I mean, I would assume they made a good case. Raymer's obviously that video that they showed from the PPA or whatever makes a good strong case as to why. Because they even compare it to, you know, stocks, trading stocks or whatever, and how come it's legal to. Yeah. Put money into companies that you have no idea how they're going to do, and it's hopeful that they're going to do well, whereas this is not a skill. So, yeah, it's pretty sad. That news just broke today, too, so hot off the presses. All right, professional poker player Al Crux, who has made the final table of the World Series of Poker main event 3 times, has been arrested on marijuana possession charges. New York police confiscated 40 pounds of marijuana in the raid.
That's a party, man.
40 pounds.
That's a party.
Good God.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see how this case goes. I think his son was caught up in it as well, too, and, you know, just charges now, but we'll be interested to see how it plays out.
And those of you who don't know Crux, he was the one that was at the final table with when it was Dan Harrington, and he went out really late, and he walked up to him, and Harrington was like, "Do you realize what you did today is better than what we did years ago? You know, this is amazing." You know, he's trying to console him and everything. He's the guy who was famous for having a towel. And for those of you who remember the TJ Cloutier bad beat story when he had pocket tens and he folded them and Crux was in the hand. And the only way Crux could have lost the hand is if those tens that he folded got back in the mix and somehow the dealer screwed up the deck and had to reshuffle. And then the guy who had pocket tens and called him got the third ten on the flop. And so it's that's his legendary status, I guess, of Crux.
And finally, Jack Feller, a councilman in Oceanside, California, has been warned by the Fair Political Practices Commission for not disclosing poker winnings on his mandated financial disclosure forms.
Oh, were they online winnings?
No, they were live. They were live. That online would be, that'd be a completely different story, I think, at this point.
That'd have been hilarious.
Yeah, so listen to all you campaigners out there. You know, don't hide that the poker income. Be proud of it.
All right, we're going to find out what O'Malley's move is. Let's hear part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are sitting at an HOE table and are currently in the $1, $2 PLO 8 round. We bought in for $250 and are hovering right around our buy-in. There are 8 players at the table, and the average stack is around $300. We are clearly one of the best players at the table, but just haven't got much to play yet. We've been sitting for about 2 hours, but our patience has not run thin, and we are still playing our best game. The blinds post, under the gun calls, with about $375. This player is a very weak PLO 8 player, and can't seem to release a hand if he hits 2-pair or better, no matter how the board comes down. And he loves chasing weak low draws. Contrary to popular poker thought, this is the exact type of opponent we want to have in our game. If we hit a monster, and he gets any piece of it, we can take him for a lot of money. We're next to act, and we look down at ace of spades, jack of diamonds, four of diamonds, deuce of spades. This is a pretty good starting hand for Omaha 8. We are double suited, with an ace-deuce, and we have some counterfeit protection. However, this is still a speculative hand, and with 6 more people to act behind us, we elect to just call. There could be an argument for raising in this spot, but we don't like raising an early position in Omaha, and then playing a hand out of position. Surprisingly, though, it gets folded around to the big blind, who checks. The pot is $7, the big blind checks dark, and the flop comes jack of spades, 7 of spades, 4 of clubs. We couldn't have asked for a much better flop here. We hit top and bottom pair. We have the nut low draw and the nut flush draw. As long as the board doesn't pair and we hit another spade, we're in the clear to scoop. So, since the big blind checked dark, the under-the-gun player now leads out for $4. It's a little over half the pot, and the only thing we can really be concerned with is a set or jack 7. And even then, we have numerous outs. But we're still going to raise here, for 2 reasons. One, We wouldn't mind taking this pot down now. And two, we're almost certain to get the big blind out and play a big heads-up pot in position with a weak player. We do the old cliche of betting pot and make it $19 to go. Just as we suspected, the big blind instantly folds, and the under-the-gun player looks back at his cards, thinks for quite a while, and just makes the call. We determine we have the best draw, and our two pair is probably good for right now. We are feeling pretty good about this pot, which is now $65, when the turn is the 9 of diamonds. Well, a swing and a miss, but we do have one more card to come, and a myriad of outs that we could feel pretty comfortable with. Basically, any spade that isn't a 9, since the 4 of spades would give us a boat, and any other low card. What's more interesting is our opponent checks to us after taking a bit of time, apparently deciding if he wanted to bet. So, we have a pretty weak made hand, but loads of draws to the nut high and the nut low. What are we doing here?
I'm excited that he did a Omaha 8.
Yeah.
And a pot limit 1, because I love this, and I was actually, the flight up to Columbus, I was rereading a great Omaha book as well, too, so really stoked about it. And, I think one of the people that transitioned to Omaha, which you don't think about, is in Omaha, you bet your draws in Omaha, because when they get there, it's much harder than Hold'em to extract more money from your opponents. I mean, remember, your board changes a lot in Omaha. I mean, your hand is defined much more than it is in Hold'em.
Right.
So, if those three hearts get there, you got to assume that somebody has it.
Yeah.
At that point, the action gets killed. So you need to bet the draws ahead of time so you get that money in. I like to say I'm an agnostic everywhere, but at the Omaha table, I always have faith there.
Yep.
And I think our listeners should too. Bet your draws, especially Sweetland like this. I mean, you got all kinds of redraws here. And hope for the best. If your opponent folds, it's unlikely he or she had a strong enough hand that you'd get paid off a lot on the future street anyhow, so not much of a loss there. And if they call, you're building a pot for you when the odds are in your favor, which I think they are here. And even if we miss, we might have showdown value here if we can get heads up. We get somebody out.
Right.
And we still got two pair, which is not a great hand, but it might be good enough. So I really don't see any reason not to bet and bet strong here.
I totally agree. What seems weird is I always bet in this situation, and it always seems like I miss.
Selective memory, my friend.
I know, but I just...
I bet you always lose the pocket aces.
I always lose the pocket aces, but it does. It seems...
Truth always flops a full house for you.
Omaha is just a devil's game. I think the devil just likes to toy with me when I play this game. So, when I'm playing Omaha, I'm always betting draws. Fortunately, O'Malley also has... like you said, he has two pair, which could lead to a boat. Might be good enough for showdown value. And I think he has a low draw still. I was trying to remember the cards.
Draw. He's got all kinds of outs.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's got all kinds of stuff to half the pot and then even maybe scooping and maybe getting him to fold. So I would bet probably around pot, like 30, I mean about $30 or so, 30-ish maybe. Because I'm assuming he asks what we do. So,
yeah, that's true.
I would bet about 30, I so. But then the fans on the site were all unanimous. They all said bet pot.
Yep.
He said we're ahead of our opponent's range, and even if we're wrong, we have a ton of outs to improve, which is what we basically just said. So let's see what happens.
Hello again. So what did you decide? That check could be construed as fishy, but we know it clearly just comes from an inexperienced Omaha 8 player. He may even have the same kind of hand that we do, two pair with some kind of low and high draw. So we're going to bet here, and this time we want him to fold. We want to end this hand right now. We settle on $50, shy of the pot, but over half pot, not giving him proper odds to draw. Our opponent appears to frown, but calls the bet rather quickly. So there's 165 in the pot, and the river is the 7 of diamonds. Our opponent shoots a quick glance at his chips, then quickly checks. Did he really play some kind of 7 this way? Could he really have Jack 7? This check is even more fishy than the first. We think about his hand for a while and determine the only hand that makes sense would be pocket 7s. However, we missed every draw we had and currently have a very weak high and no low at all. We do toy with the idea of placing in a bluff. Perhaps we represented pocket jacks without even realizing it? But in the end, he seems to be pretty strong, and we're probably going to get snapped off with any bet we make. We decide to check right behind him. He expresses displeasure with our move and turns over ace of clubs, seven of hearts, five of spades, four of spades. He hit a two-outer on us, and we are in shock that he called us down all the way with bottom two pair, and then got rewarded for it. But our read on this player was solid, and he played exactly how we anticipated him to. He didn't even have us beat on the low draw, and his flush draw was extremely weak. We cringe at the play and silently steam as he stacks his chips. And we learn a hard lesson about just how frustrating Omaha 8 can be with so many fish in the pond. But we don't lose sight of the fact that this is the exact kind of player we want in our game. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley, and I'll see you on the felt.
Interesting. what I think is most interesting, too, is I'm not sure why we'd want to end this hand on the turn. I mean, when I got a draw this rich, I'm trying to get a lot of money out of my opponents.
Mm.
You know, again, poker comes down to not how many pots you won, but how many chips you won. And so I thought it was really interesting that he said, you know, hey, I'm trying to end it right here. I mean, I guess in the back of your mind, you're like, you know, I don't really have anything right now. My two pair is probably not good. And if I can win before, and I guess that's common in Omaha, but this draw is just so rich, isn't it?
Yeah. I can see.
Flush, you know, we got boat draws, we got all kinds of things. I think our goal needs to be to get more value out of this hand, not necessarily to win it right now. And, you know, if our opponent folds, he folds. But I don't think that's our objective. You know, and the other thing, Chris, too, I think I always giggle every time I see an opponent check the river with a big hand and then get upset when another player doesn't bet his or hand for them.
Yeah, I know.
Folks, you control your own destiny on the river. Bet it or don't whine about it. One or the other. Either you bet and then everybody folds and you're like, all right, fine. But, you know, if you check and then, oh, I really wanted you to bet. I giggle every time at that. I'm like, well, if you really wanted me to bet, you should have bet. I'm not stupid enough to bet into that.
Yeah, you know, when the board pairs, it's almost impossible that you know, if you know, someone's going to bet into you if the board pair and you have a full house. They're obviously trying to, you know, dodge it. And if somebody's betting into you, then they've probably got a better hand than you. I'm glad we didn't do anything foolish there.
Yeah,
you know, on the river and get out of line when that board
pairs. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no reason to. And again, in Omaha, your hand's defined. So, yeah. I mean, the time to bluff in Omaha is your draws. I mean, you do a lot of semi-bluffing in Omaha, you know, and if you get called, then you got a chance to catch up. At the river, I mean, the hand's defined at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's some great Omaha players out there that would advocate bluffing on the river. But I think for players getting used to the game, that's the last place you want to bluff.
Yeah. And like you said, unless I have a maniac that I know could have any two cards or any four cards in his case and be on my left and I know is going to bet the river, there's no way I check a boat like that.
Not at all. Absolutely not.
There's no way.
I mean, it's a good sign. I mean, obviously, this player is relatively new to the game, it sounds like. And those are the people I see. I don't see a lot of experienced players checking the river. It's the, you know, they think they're getting crafty. And I don't think they've thought through that. Because they see other people get crafty with that, but they get crafty with that on the flop and the turn, specifically the turn, I think.
Yeah.
The river is a completely different card, and at that point, you know, if you got it, bet it. And, you know, hopefully people won't believe you or call you or even raise you, but, you know, if they fold, you know, you're not losing any money because, you know, they're not going to put anything in anyhow. So you might as well bet it.
Yeah, you know, remember way back when Poker After Dark did the PLO shows for a while, the cash games for a while.
Yeah.
They had an interview with Phil Galfond, oh my God, Clay Aiken, and he had an interesting comment. He says, you know, in PLO, the hand doesn't even begin until the turn.
Yeah,
and that's
very true.
And it's true because after the flop, you know, I mean, unless they absolutely have the nuts on the flop, the turn is where all the real action begins, and I thought that was an interesting comment that's where all the hands get taken away from. And so just remember, keeping that in mind too, and the turn is a big, big, big street.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up. Calling me, calling me, calling me, by the devil keeps calling me.
All right, we took a couple weeks off, Chris.
Yeah, we thought we'd break it up.
It was a long trip, you know. We needed to rest a little bit at some point. No, we took a couple weeks off of our continuing coverage of our Go West road trip. But we're back this week, and we'll finish it up next week. Today we're going to be talking about Northern California.
Yes.
I like the poker up there as well, too. And we always need to remind folks, particularly if you didn't hear the first couple shows, we didn't visit every room in the area, only the largest, but lots of them. But lots more rooms in those areas. Visit the Where to Play page on NAMagazine.com for a complete list and map. And if you missed the previous weeks, go back about a month, and you'll hear us talk about Los Angeles and Southern California. And then, of course, next week, we will combine Arizona and St. Louis together, which really is only combined by the Rams. Or the Cardinals, I mean, right?
The Cardinals, yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, they have, like, absolutely nothing in common.
Well, we could do 6 degrees of separation of Scott Long.
Yeah, it's true.
And try to link you up with like the Rams and or the Cardinals, and that's how you would do it, I guess.
All right, well, we'll start in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose. A little different than some of the other areas. It's all card rooms up there. And the two in San Jose just got no limit last year. Very odd city. You know, in California, it seems like there's lots of places poker's pretty free, but San Jose really kind of puts a clamp on it. Yeah, they can't even do promotions there, right? Is that what I understood?
Yeah, I think there's no promotion.
Or limited amount.
There's no promotions in San Jose. And it's weird that they just got no limit since, you know, that Bay 101 World Poker Tour stop is obviously a no limit tournament, and it's been the most popular stop in World Poker Tour history every year as far as fans. And it's just so weird that they're just getting no limit there now. It's kind of odd.
Yeah. Of course, you know, Bay 101 is probably the best known because it's been on WPT for years now. But we'll talk about this in a minute. But Garden City's new property is I think, going to be a game changer up there.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely amazing plans on the books for that. And then, you know, up north of that, a lot of history, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been around for a long time, and I'm a history buff, so I kind of like that.
I don't know if you remember this from the trip or not, but it was funny. You know, we're flying in, we're landing in what's known as what Silicon Valley, right? Isn't that where all the genius, you know, computer people are and everything? And we get in the car, and the damn GPS thing wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It couldn't find a signal for like an hour. We were like driving around aimlessly, hoping that we're going in the right direction. And I'm like, here we are, the birthplace of computer, you know, whatever. And the Garmin won't work, or whatever the hell it is we have, TomTom, whatever the hell. It wouldn't work. And I'm like, oh my God.
I blame Mark Zuckerberg.
I do too.
It's a new Facebook that caused our GPS not to work. All right, well, I guess let's start at Bay 101 because that's the one that everybody knows. For me, I love the dolphin motif. They have a big fountain out front, and they use the dolphins throughout it. Really ornate building, and they put all the California games, as I like to call them, on one side, and then they got poker spread across two rooms on the other.
Big rooms.
Big, big, big. Really a really good selection of high limit games there. They had they told us to get a 200-400 game going in the winter, and when we were there, they had a lot of big games, which we didn't necessarily see in a lot of the other rooms. Obviously, the big rooms down in L.A. Had those games, but real big games. Games that you and I will never sit down in.
And the other thing, too, is we went there in the morning, and there was nothing really going on, but then when we went back at night, because we were staying in that area, you know, that's when it was really, the big games were really going, too, and that's something else. A lot of those rooms that we visited them in the morning because it just, we had to, so we could see them all. So you wouldn't necessarily see all the biggest games then. But, yeah, they did have some big games. And it was interesting. They have, like, one guy, the Brush, sitting there with the mic, and he just sits there and calls out. It's like he never stops calling out
because
they're so busy. But at the same time, too, it can get a little frustrating. You know, there's nowhere for me to sit either. I was getting frustrated, too. I had to wait. There was, like, 10 or 12 people in front of me. And I had to sit somewhere. I couldn't find anywhere to sit for the longest time.
You got set up in the California game, actually. Yeah,
I walked around. I did. I walked around there for a while. I watched some people play. I couldn't even understand half the stuff that was going on. But, yeah, it was a massive room. And when I finally did sit down, I played for about 30 or 40 or so. And a guy sitting across from me, and he had a nice hand. And, you know, I was like, you know, well played or whatever. It wasn't with me, but he played a nice hand against somebody. And I was like, you know, nice hand. And he said, thanks. And he says, it was like 30 or 40 minutes in. And he says, oh, is that Scott? I said, what? Because you had gotten up and I had said something to you. You were doing something. I don't know what it was. I think you got table change or you moved or something. It was a must move or something. And I'm like, yeah, that's Scott. And he's like, hey, I'm Mark. I've listened to you guys for a while. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, why did you say, you know, we were there 30 or 40 minutes. And I don't know if he didn't realize it was me for a while or if he was wanted to be sure or if he didn't recognize it to my voice or he's just really into the hands or whatever. But he's like, yeah, I listen to you guys make my commute. You know, way better. I have like an hour commute, and I listen to you, and so after that, that's all we did. We just talked about a lot of stuff, and it was pretty wild table. I had a guy on my right who was on his left, who was pretty crazy, just wanted to make big calls and show off for everybody, and then there was a guy far to my left who was really wild too. So there was a lot of action at my table. I don't know if that's what it was like at yours, but I know you cleaned up where you played.
Yeah, I was playing Omaha and did really, really well. But I'm a little upset. You got the nice, happy listener at your table, and I got Grumpy McGrumpersome at my table. And you know, I like to say that I don't let emotions get me at the table. I think I've got a fairly even keel compared to most poker players. But this guy got to me, and a little embarrassed, obviously, because we know we try to be very careful when we're out in public. When we have Annie up on her shirt, you know, we can't, and not that we're jerks, but we can't be as free to say what was on our minds. We do a lot of grumbling under our breath. For whatever reason, I just forgot about that for a minute. Had a little meltdown. But I think I was in the right, and players backed me up. But still, it doesn't make it right for me to have a meltdown. But you know, and this guy at the table that perpetually short buying, and we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago. He would buy in for $20 or something like that at a time. It's been a while now; I can't remember what it was, but it was ridiculous. He'd play a hand, he'd be all in, and then he'd buy in again. And but I don't care. I was just sitting there watching TV. It wasn't really playing. And there was a hand where, like four or five hands when I sat down. He always was late releasing his hand.
Right.
You get this a lot in Omaha too. The guys like look down at the cards, look back at the board. Did I win? What's he have down there? What's a high? Okay. What's low? All right. And you know, I just want to say, God, just table your hand. Let the dealer figure it out. Obviously, you're incapable. You're on the fifth street of this hand, and you still don't know what you have. You're really in the next 5 minutes of trying to figure it out. You're gonna have to turn it over to the dealer. That's their job, is to tell you whether you won or not. And a couple players were getting upset at him for being slow to release his hand. You know, I don't care. I was watching TV, whatever, playing the game and whatever. So I had a hand where I was, I had a really strong hand, and it turns out me and another player had the same hand. But, you know, we were at max rake, so you don't want to, like, you know, check it down at that point. You want to keep raising each other until you hit the cap. And so this guy raised, and I was trying to figure out whether it was a cap or not. And so then the guy that's driving me crazy, he says, like, turn your hand over. What are you waiting for? And I'm like, oh my gosh. I didn't realize that I should have realized, but that he was all in, like, on the turn.
Uh-huh.
So I was looking at him, and he had these big furry hands, you know, and I couldn't tell whether he had cards, and I didn't know whether it was on me or not, and he's railing into me, turn your hand over, and I just went unhinged. I'm like, dude, every hand, you have been waiting, you're taking forever to open your hand, one time, I don't realize that you're all in, and you're going to be all over me. He's like, look at the pot, there's a side puck, how can you not tell, I'm all in. And he wouldn't let it go. And I kept saying, dude, this is not worth getting upset about. You know, I did the whole glass houses thing. He just wasn't buying any of it. And then a couple of players were like, dude, I'm like, God, this is what I was talking to you about. You can't do that. So I love that. I got some love. So then, but it was great. It's a must move table, right?
Yeah.
So they moved him. I'm like, oh, thank you. I don't have to deal with it anymore. I was starting to get that irresponsible vindictiveness in my head.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the next time he's in a hand. And if he doesn't release his hand the minute my chip hits the table, I am all in it. I'm down this guy's throat. And, of course, you shouldn't do that. But it turned out not to be that way, so they must move him. All right, good. I don't have to worry about him. About 30 minutes later, yeah, must move Scott Long. I'm like, oh, hey, okay, great. Move to the must move table. Guess who I get to sit right next to? Furry McPherson. And I'm like, oh, God, you're killing me. So it turned out being fine. He didn't slow roll anybody anymore, and he bought in for 268 times and left with no money. So I shouldn't tap on the aquarium, I know, but very rare display of emotion from me when I'm wearing the Any of Colors.
Oh,
very
good. All right. Well, the other thing, too, is we met Brett Miller there, our Northern California ambassador. Great guy. A lot of fun. Had a lot of talk about, you know, the area with him and stuff. And that was kind of fun. I was just so thrilled with how many of our ambassadors we got to meet on the trip who were willing to come out and see us and hook up with us at some point. And it was great. We had a lot of fun. But we did go to Garden City. I've been seeing like Garden City's ads and magazines for years, and I always wanted to see this room. Yeah, and I'm glad I did, because if I didn't now, I might not have seen it, because it's going to be gone by March.
Yep, absolutely. They're getting ready to build a brand new. Actually, they're pretty close to done building a brand new 8-story card room right across the freeway from Bay 101.
Yeah,
it's going to open February, March. They're going to call it Casino Matrix. We got an amazing tour of it, but first let's talk about Garden City, because.
Yeah.
I love how you call it a Swiss chalet building. And it is. I mean, I think you're calling like Normandy something like that, too.
Yeah, I called Normandy.
I didn't see it at Normandy. I didn't understand. But here, definitely, I thought the little pigtail blonde chick was going to come out and give me some hot cocoa here. But really cool, I think. I mean, obviously, it's an old building, and there's a reason they're trying to get out of it. But from an aesthetics point of view, I mean, you don't see a lot of poker rooms where you feel like you're at the ski lodge.
Yeah, it was. It was like you were in a home or a lodge or something. It was really warm and cozy. You know, it was kind of, it's so weird. It's like they found this building or something. You know, it's not, it wasn't built for poker. It was like they just walked in and said, this could be a cool place to play cards. Let's make it a card room, you know, or that's what it felt like. And when you first walked in on the left-hand side, there was a high limit California game room, and they were real strict about it too. You couldn't just like walk in and hang out. Yeah, you couldn't just ogle them, and so that was, it was nice, and it was like I said, it was dark and warm in there too. You know, the guys really wanted their privacy, and then outside of that, they had the other low limit California games and some interesting games there that I didn't even understand, which I, you know, which isn't surprising because I really don't know them. But but we got a tour with the manager. The general manager came around, which was I was really impressed with that. You get the general manager talking to you. You know, they care about, you know, meeting you. And. And that was really great. And he gave us a tour of the place, and he told us about some tracking software that they have for dealers and stuff. And it was really unique, really quite amazing. And we're actually running a story about it in our December issue. So if you want to learn more about it, read that. But we'll tell you a little bit about it now. You know how a lot of times there's a push system for the dealers and everything?
Yeah.
And this keeps track of everything they're doing. It's sort of like Genesis Bravo. But they... it takes favoritism out of the dealing, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's all completely random. It's really going to an extreme to solve the problem, I think, but it seems to work for them.
Yep, it keeps track of the pushes and the rakes and mistakes, and which I know, like we said, I think Bravo does that too, but this is their own software. They wrote it themselves for their own card room, which is really incredible.
Well, I think the point they made too is that, you know, they took over this room a couple years ago, and... you know, like a lot of rooms, it had, you know, rampant favoritism. So, you know, if you are golf buddies with the floor, you got the choice tables to deal at, and you had to work your way up, and they wanted to take care of that. So this way, you know, boom, the computer randomly tells you where you're going next, so it doesn't matter who you know.
Yep, very good. And then we saw the tour, the poker room was like sort of sunken down, which is kind of cool, and it was a unique setup. I really liked it, and you could tell though that he was itching to take us to the new building.
Yeah.
And so we went over to the new building. Like you said, it was right across the freeway from Bay 101, which is probably going to be a real interesting little battle they're going to have going on there.
Yeah,
now
I think so.
And like you said, it opens up around March and called Casino Matrix. And it was wild. He showed us everything. He took us in those little trailers. I always wanted to go in one of those trailers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I never did that before. They had a trailer outside the building, and they keep all the plans in there and all the textiles and all the different sort of samples of what they're using for the floor and the drapes and everything, and all the schematics and everything. And it was really, really sweet seeing all that stuff. That was kind of cool to be a part of that, let them. And so we're in the building, He's like, so you guys, we're going to walk over to the building, right? You want to go see it? And I'm like, yeah, of course we do. You know, this is great. So he's like, all right, you got to wear hard hats.
Yes, and I hard hat tour.
I so regretted not, like, taking a picture with my camera phone of us with the hard hats on. But, you know, we looked kind of goofy with the hard hats, and we walked over with him, and it was cool. You could, you know, first he showed us the plans, and then when you went to the building, you could sort of envision exactly what it was going to be like and how much room it was. And they were pretty far along already. You know, the shell of the eight stories was already up, and but the service elevator, you know, that they use for the construction workers was there, but they wouldn't let us get on it. And so he's like, the view of the top is amazing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And he's like, you want to go up there? And I'm like, look at Scott, and I'm hoping Scott says no. And he's like, hell yeah, I want to go up there. I want to go up to the top. Let's go.
It's only eight stories. How hard can it be?
And I actually felt bad for him because he had a torn oblique muscle from working out or something. So
something like that, yeah.
Going up eight flights, oh my god! So, you know, and we'll talk about some other stuff about the place, but I mean, this was brutal. My heart was pounding so hard, I literally thought it was going to come out of my chest. It was unbelievable, but it was worth it when we got up there. But it never ended. The stairs never ended.
Yeah, again, I was thinking eight stories. I mean, that's nothing. And you know, because usually when I go someplace, I usually try to take the stairs too, unless it's like, you know, John Hancock Building or something.
Yeah.
Because I don't get enough exercise, so if I can walk some stairs, I will. Like, eight stories, that's nothing. But it was, by like the fourth story, I'm like, God, did he say eight or 80? I'm going to get to the top of this thing.
Oh, my God. I was like, why didn't... And then when I got to the top, I turned around and saw the elevator there, and I'm like, why couldn't we just gone up that thing?
Or get a little pole and we could slide down. but no, this is going to be really, really amazing. They're putting, I believe it's $80 million or something into this. It's an eight-story card room. Now, remember, this is a card room. It's not a casino.
Yeah.
No slot machines or anything like that. It's just cards. And it's only because the way California works, you're locked into the number of tables. You can't request more. So I think it's a 40 or 50-table room, no more than that. And that's all their games, including the California games. And certainly they make a lot more money on the Baccarat and those things. So to build an entire eight-story building for 40 to 50 table games is truly amazing to me.
Yeah.
Now, on the top floor, they're making this massive high-limit room with a semi-private entourage room, as they call it. So, you know, they get the little Baccarat tables where the high rollers are playing, and then they've got, like, a little area where they're friends and family can hang out and play Xbox and stuff and be comfortable.
Yeah.
So the entire eighth floor, I think it's going to be like four of the tables is all really nice. And then all the other games are going to be on the first floor, and then they got offices and things on the other six stories of it. You know, it's amazing the thought they put into it. I guess, you know, if I'm going to spend $80 million, I'm going to put a lot of thought into it too. But they talked about how they want to come in and you have this... They didn't have this big barn-like feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to feel like they're in a big place, but at the same time, they want to feel like they're cozy. So they're creating cocoons of action, you know, little blocks of tables, so you kind of feel intimate in this big, massive area.
Right.
Massive.
It's funny, too, that you brought up that, you know, you spent $80 million, so you want to give a lot of thought to it. But when we're on the top floor, Scott turns to him and says, have they ever thought about doing a rooftop bar? This would be a great place to do it. And he was like, so they hadn't really thought of that. Unless they didn't want to let the cat out of the bag or something. But they really hadn't thought of that yet. And I would be surprised if they did a rooftop bar now. You heard it here first. Scott Long gave him the idea for it. And it was hilarious.
That's place or something. Give me some royalties off of it.
Because it is. It's a sweet view. You know, I mean, there are highways there and everything. But, I mean, you're looking out at, you know, Northern California mountains and stuff. It's beautiful.
They're going to be building a W hotel in the second phase there. I mean, they have a couple hotels right across the street, but it's going to be a very interesting place when the hotel's done, and there's some high limit games there.
Yeah,
but,
like a destination place now, you know.
And not as fancy, but I really, really was surprised and enjoyed our stop at Artichoke Joe's.
Oh, me too.
It's up near San, it's right near the San Francisco airport, probably the closest one there. You know, you kind of get these for right or wrong, you form these opinions based on the names of places.
Yeah.
You know, if it's somebody, something cool like Casino Matrix. You feel like you're going in there and it's going to be maybe even kind of snobby, maybe, but, you know, elegant and stuff. Artichoke Joe's, I kind of feel like it could be like Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I let my mind think. And it had nothing like that at all. We walk in and, you know, really an old California feel. And all these aquariums, too, set up with fish. And I'm like, yep. Wow, that's amazing. I'd love to sit there and play poker and feel calm knowing little fish are swimming around. And we had just an amazing talk with one of the floors there. And just a great place. I would feel completely comfortable and I'd love just playing long hours there, I think.
Yeah, and the room had a sort of this L-shaped feel to it. When you came in, there was like this long, not corridor because that would be too narrow, but there was this long area where they had tournaments, and then along the back way was where they had all the cash games, and it sort of like V'd off or L'd off or whatever, and it was really kind of nice. And it was funny because the guy that we talked to was, I think his name was Chip, I think, and he was dealing, and he's actually like the elder statesman there. He's been around a long time and knows everything. Great guy, great stories. And he said he liked our magazine a lot too, which is kind of cool. Made me feel
always
good.
Like that. Yeah.
You know, it goes to show you too that when, you know, when their dealers need a break or whatever, the floor sits in and deals for them, you know, which happens a lot of times, but some poker room managers couldn't even possibly do that. They're just administrative. And this guy, you know, he was dealing and he came over to talk to us and just really gracious with his time and his compliments. And yeah, like you said, the room, it was more, like you said, old California feel and nothing like I thought it would be. Really, yeah. When you hear that title and you think about it, you know, the title, but the name of the room, yeah, you think it's just sort of this sort of, you know, sort of whimsical or whatever, but when you get in there, I would have loved to have played there if we had time.
Yeah, and they get some really big games in there, too, and a good selection of smaller ones as well. I mean, they had stuff that I certainly would have played, so I'll be looking forward to going back to San Francisco. And equally interesting, I think, was Lucky Chances.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit north of that in Colma. You know, I consider myself a history and geography buff, but I never heard of Colma. And when we're driving in, I was like, wow, there are a lot of cemeteries here.
Yeah, I know.
It's really wild. And then the GPS takes us past a couple really large ones. And now arriving at destination, Lucky Chances. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it looks like a mortuary.
I know.
And not in a bad way. I mean, it was really nice and stately looking, but not at all what I expected. And we get in and we talk to one of the floors and she starts laughing. She's like, yeah, have you heard about Colma? And I'm like, no. She's like, well, you know, our saying here is, it's good to be alive in Colma.
Yep.
And apparently she said, you know, a lot of the San Francisco had a lot of problem with cemeteries and bodies were eroding out of the ground or something.
Yeah, from flooding. It was flooding.
Yeah. And so they had they moved them all to Colma. So Colma's got this burgeoning industry of cemeteries.
And apparently Joe DiMaggio, Wyatt Earp, and Tina, was it Tina Turner? No, was it Tina Turner's dog?
Yeah.
Was it Tina Turner's dog or was it someone else?
I thought it was Tina Turner, but maybe it was somebody else's.
Yeah, I'll have to think of it. But anyway, yeah, all these famous people and things were buried in all these. And then I guess it was the dog was in an unmarked grave because she buried it in a fur coat or something. I don't know the story behind it, but I thought they buried the fur coat. I don't know. It was just some funny stuff about the cemeteries. I really don't know what was going on.
It was crazy. And, obviously she's mentioned they have, you know, architectural rules there. So that's why everything kind of looks the same there. So I don't necessarily think Lucky Chances wanted to look like a mortuary. It's just,
right.
That's what the city does. And, you know, like I said, it's a nice looking place too. I don't want to make it think like you're going to, you know, see Lurch or something. but on the inside, very Asian feel inside, now, which is not surprising. I mean, then a lot of players and the California rooms are Asian, and certainly the games they like to play are the bigger money games, the baccarats and things. Catering to that clientele is very smart business. But of all the ones we went to, I think it had the most Asian feel, I thought.
Yeah, it had tons of Asian paintings and banners and stuff like that around, characters and stuff. So it was definitely pushing toward that end. But, you know, she was very nice. It's one of the rooms that we aren't circulating in yet, so if you play there, go there and demand your ante up, and we'll see if we'll get our magazine in there, by the way.
Yeah, we'd love to start sending it to them.
Now, the next room, Oaks Card Club. A lot of history here. This room's been around 115 years. I couldn't wait to see this room. Of course, we couldn't find a parking space.
Yeah, yeah.
We drove around for about literally 20 minutes just trying to hope something would open up.
Yeah, it was a Friday afternoon, and when we got inside, it was packed. Could see why. I mean, they had two parking lots, and luckily we found on-street parking for 20 minutes and got in and got out. I don't know what we would have done. We would have been there forever. But busy, busy place.
And it got its card name, the card club's room name, from the Oakland Oaks. It used to be a minor league baseball team, I guess, that used to play there. And that's what they named. They used to come in and play on Saturday nights or whatever it was, or... And so that's how they got the name. That's pretty interesting. I mean, I thought it was just because it was Oakland area, you know, the Oaks, you know, the Oaks.
Yeah,
sort of,
makes sense, yeah.
But yeah, that was pretty cool. And so we're sitting there and we're talking to, like, one of the managers and one of the floors or whatever, and we're having a little conversation. And these people walk by and like, tap him on the shoulder, and they say, "Hey, hi, Nate, talking. Are you going to play tonight? Blah, blah, blah." Okay. He turns to us and says, "You know who that was?" And we're like, "No." He says, "That's MC Hammer's parents." We're like, he said, "You can't touch this." We're like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, he's known MC Hammer since he was a, you know, wee high to a grasshopper or whatever." And he said that, you know, they play there all whenever they're in town, because I guess they're by Coastal or something. I don't know. And they were there at night, and they were probably they were there for a show or something, but they were going to play. And MC Hammer plays there once in a while, and he knows the whole family. I was like, "Oh my God, the stuff you find out on these trips, man, pretty crazy."
Yeah, and they ended up playing Pan, which is a game I heard about. It used to be played at the Sahara a long time ago, obviously in California, too. Brett, our master, actually played with MC Hammer's dad that day before he came to see us. So he was playing Pan. So I guess we need to hit him up for lessons on what the heck Pan is and how to play it. But I think the other really funny thing about this is not... I mean, I love telling people that I met MC Hammer's parents, but I also like to tell them that we were in California all over the state, right?
Yeah.
L.A., San Diego, San Francisco, and our only celebrity sighting of the entire trip was MC Hammer's parents. 4 gajillion movie stars and rock stars and all kinds of athletes and stuff out there. We don't see one of them, but we see MC Hammer's parents.
Well, we saw some dead stars, so that was good.
Well, that's true.
Well, after that, we went to California Grand. New strip mall-like room, but no one wanted to talk to us there, so we don't have much to say about it.
Yeah, but if you play there, you know, we want to send some magazines for free, so let them know.
They can get them.
Our phone number ring. Our phone number works. Give us a call.
Tell them they call the hotline. We'll even give them some swag if they want.
Of course, then we had a little bit of a situation, not of a poker variety, did not do well. The NEF Travel Agency did not do well on this trip. We always go for the cheapest deal. I mean, I guess the point I always like to tell people is, you know, because I'm part of the budget frequent rental club card now thing. When I was setting that up, you know, they're owned by Avis, and they automatically set me up in Avis's club. And they're like, you know, "Hey, do you rent from..." No, I rent from budget, and they're like, "Why?" I'm like, "Because it's cheaper than Avis." And they're like, "Oh, okay." And they acted like that was weird. I'm like, "Oh, why am I going to pay more for the same car?"
Yeah,
it's a car.
Yeah,
and really, why am I going to pay more for any car? So you know, we went to a on this trip. Budget was not the cheapest. We went with a company that was the cheapest, and got lucky.
Yeah, we got a nice places. Car.
We got some really nice cars. We were really shocked, and then. Well, let's just say, I think we figured out how they are able to rent the cars pretty cheaply.
Yeah, they angle shoot. That's what they do. They gave us a car that they just washed, and they didn't chamois it or dry it down. So the car was covered in water dots and spots all over the place. So when you do the little inspection, clearly you're not going to see anything on a windshield.
Right,
you're not going to see a nick or a spot or anything because it's all beaded up with water dots and everything. So we're like, "Yeah, we checked out everything in the car. We circled what we saw." And we said, "All right, they signed us out. We go." And when we returned the car, of course, the windshield's dry now. It's a day later.
Yeah.
And there was a nick on the windshield that obviously wasn't from us. We only had it for one day. We barely drove it, and we would have known something hit the windshield and made that noise while we were driving it. So the nick was there before we got it. And the guy, he walks around the car, and like a magnet, he goes right to the nick. Like he didn't know the nick was already there or something. You know what I mean? It was like he knew the nick was there, and he's like, "Oh, there's a nick in the windshield." I'm like, "It was there before we got it." "No, it wasn't. This nick wasn't there. It's not circled on your sheet." We're like, "Dude, when you got us the car, it was soaking wet. We couldn't possibly have seen the nick even if it was or it wasn't. It's on you. It's on you. It's not on us." "Nope, sorry. There's a nick right here." and then you started to lose it. And I'm like, you know what? We're on separate flights. I got to get to my plane, buddy. You're like, I'll take care of this. Don't worry. So I was glad to leave, but I was ticked off. And then take it from there. What happened after that?
Yeah, I end up, we got three letters of management there, and I kept screaming them all, professionally, of course. And they insisted that we fill out a damage form, and I did. And, you know, I just got my credit card statement. I haven't heard anything from it from now, so I think whoever does the accident claims said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you hassled this poor, great customer of ours over the stupid Nick, because obviously we haven't got charged or anything like that. But that was the first time I've ever had that situation with the rental car ever. And I guarantee you from now on, I spend an hour walking around on that thing. And the funny thing is this particular company, like I said, we got some nice cars the last 2 days, but the first couple cars we got from this company, we just circled the car.
Yeah, circled the car.
A little damage thing. We're just like, hey, the whole thing is effed.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I want to do from now on. I'm going to put a big circle on the whole car and say, anything that happens on this car, it's your fault.
Yeah.
But fortunately, you moved on. I came home to finish up the magazine, and you moved on to the Sacramento area.
Yeah, I took a little puddle jumper over to Sacramento. You know, some folks were laughing at me for flying from San Jose to Sacramento. But, you know, hey, we're big-time magazine publishers. We don't drive. Particularly because we can't be trusted with rental cars, apparently. But no, we flew over to Sacramento just for the day. Didn't get to spend as much time in the market as I would like to, but what I saw was very interesting. It's a great little market. It's you know, outside of town, ringing it in three directions are these new large tribal casinos, with all the, you know, trappings of that, you know, you would expect. But in town are a half a dozen or small card clubs. A new one, Lotus, just opened after the week after we were there. So not only are the card clubs competing against each other, but they're also competing against the glitz and glamour of these tribal casinos that are outside the area. Not particularly convenient. I mean, I think closest is 30 minutes. The other ones are maybe an hour. So it's not like, you know, you're going to be driving from one to one. But still, you got to – it's tough, I think, when you're operating a you know, you're a sole proprietor operating a card club in a strip mall to be able to compete with the – you know, these big fancy places outside of town,
right.
Let alone your normal competitors down the street. I didn't have time to make it up to Cache Creek or Jackson or Ranchera, which the two are the big ones, but everybody I talked to said they're really nice, and I'll look forward to checking them out next time. But I did get up to Thunder Valley and had a wonderful time out there. Ben Irwin is a great, young, energetic manager. He's doing great things there. Room really, I mean, no offense to him, he's doing great things, but I mean, it's a room really you have to try hard to screw up.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous what they've done with it. You know, I heard about this room for the first time when I was in Reno in the summer, and every single poker room manager in Reno mentioned this room by name, and they were shocked that when it opened, and it's a good hour and a half from Reno.
Yeah.
When it opened, they were all saying, you know, hey, we expected that we're going to lose a lot of our California business because those people don't need to drive all the way over here now. But what they weren't expecting was so much of the Reno business is making that hour and a half drive over to Thunder Valley to play, because the place is just that nice. They recently expanded it based on the demand. They do a great daily tournament business. They get more than 100 players for most of their events. And they're doing a big tournament series at the end of this month, around Thanksgiving.
Yep. They advertised that in the magazine and wrote about it, and very excited to get some content out of them, too. It's very good for the magazine.
Yeah, the Harvest Hold'em series. I remember one of the funny things that Ben and I, we had lunch together and we were talking, and he's like, you know what? All these rooms do everything. It's all like the fall classic or the winter classic. You know, I really want to get away from the whole season thing and try to have it have a name of its own that still reflects the season. And he hadn't named it by the time I was there, but he ended up settling on Harvest Hold'em series, which,
yeah.
I don't know, kind of feels warm and tingly.
Yeah, and Harvest Season, you know, I mean, people can relate to when it, you know when it's going to be, so it's pretty smart, actually. It's a smart title.
And then, of course, you know, all these card clubs, I only had time to visit two. I went to Lucky Derby. It's a small room attached to a sports bar. Great staff there. Kirk, I think, the assistant floor, I talked to him forever. Great guy. The owner there, Tom, really likes Andy up as well, too. Certainly would recommend going there. It's a good neighborhood place to play. And then the Capitol Casino downtown, very nice layout on the inside. Again, small, intimate, but just a good good solid card club. I mean, you know, we're used to casinos in a lot of places, and these card clubs really do a nice job. And then, so, you know, we didn't stay in the best hotels on this trip.
Right.
It's safe to say.
Right.
So I was a little excited about this one just because it's one of those extended stay jobbies.
Yeah.
You know, with like the fridge and the extra room and stuff. And it's interesting to me that when you go to these places for just one night, you get a pretty good deal on them. So I'm like, you know what? Hey, it's been a long trip. Maybe I'll be able to do some laundry. They have a laundry center there. And so I get there. And I didn't really think these extended stays had a cut rate. But it really was kind of like the Motel 6 of the extended stay chain. Again, we won't name the chain, but I was like, very interesting. But, you know, I drove around. There's a poker room. Got back. I'm like, it was kind of late at night. I just wanted to kind of enjoy myself in the room. Stopped at a gas station, filled up the car because, you know, I had the early flight the next morning. Got a tall boy beer and an ice cream sandwich. I was going to back enjoy a beer and an ice cream sandwich. And the gas station clerk looked at me and was like, wow, you sure you don't want two sandwiches? And I'm like, no, one's fine. She's like, it's only a dollar more for the second one. And I'm like, no, really, one's good. I mean, it's already pretty sick that my dinner tonight is a tall boy high life and an ice cream sandwich. Now you want me to have two? And she's like, all right, but it's only a dollar more. But I'm happy to say that I stayed strong and did not allow my fatness to override my common sense. And I enjoyed my one ice cream sandwich and my tall boy went to bed and flew to St. Louis the next morning.
And that will be next week. We'll talk about St. Louis and Arizona. Some good stuff came out of there as well, and it'll be our final segment of our four-part trip stories, and looking forward to it. But now, let's finally get to our Hand of the Week.
All right, we're back with a real Hand of the Week this week. We've had the situations for a while, which we've enjoyed, but it's nice to mix it up a little bit with hands.
Right.
And, I mentioned Big Guru, a longtime listener who has been on one of our cruises, coming on the New Orleans one as well, too. He's noticed that we haven't had very many Hands of the Week, so he dug deep into his online archives back when we could play online. Poker Stars, I miss you so much. And sent us one of his hands from that. Of course, this did not come on Poker Stars. Came from a site unaffiliated with Annie Up and currently bankrupt. And they were in a rush to go bankrupt, too, by the way. But it's a no limit hold'em. It's a sit and go. 4 plus 40. And it is a fast-paced one. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
And we're at the 5,100 level. Our hero is just shy of 5,000, and everybody's right around 5,000. Short stack has a little bit more than 1,100, and another short stack has about 1,700. But everybody else is right around where he is. There's really only, looking at it, two people with more chips than him, and one of them has them by 15.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
All right, remember, it's 5,100. We have three folds, and we look down at the 9 of clubs, 10 of clubs.
Okay.
I know you're a little rusty because we haven't been doing
hands. It's my favorite hand.
This is your cue to actually say something.
This is my favorite hand.
Is it really?
Yeah. Because basically it's my birthday.
Oh, that's right.
And it makes a lot of nice straights and stuff, so I like to have this hand. I like to raise.
It, so it makes it 40 times better.
Yeah, of course. I like to raise this hand. And we're already in fourth position, and we're first to come in, so I like a little raise here. We got 5,000 chips. I wouldn't mind making it 300 here.
Yeah, this is one of those hands when we have listeners who are like, you know, hey, I've been playing ABC poker my whole life. I'm trying to break out. You know, how do I figure out how to step out a little bit? I always suggest these suited connectors. Particularly this thought when everybody folds, you know, take a shot here and see if you can steal the blinds. If you don't, if you get called, then you got a hand that can do a lot of things. Just got to be smart enough to get away from it on the flop if you miss.
Yeah, I mean, here's the point, too. You know, if you're just limping with this hand, then you're already telling everybody that I have to hit something to make my hand, and you're giving people behind you a chance to steal from you. Whereas if you come in raising, you can take it down right there, or at least you have control of the hand if nobody re-raises you. So I like raising, and of course, you know, not a lot of people raise with suited connectors. They don't understand to do that. So it puts the little, you know, disguising the hand kind of thing. So I like to raise with it.
All right, well, that's exactly what he did. He didn't go the full Monty that you suggested of 300. He goes for 240, okay. Which he says 160% of the pot, which is not a typical move for him. And not sure what I was thinking. I always like when our heroes know right away that they can't defend their move. They just did it.
Well, you know, 250 is not bad. That's 2.5 times. A lot of people will do that. They raise 2.5x. So I mean,
we talked about this on the show last week,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So I don't have a problem with that raise. I just generally bet 3x all the time when I'm raising, so that it's disguising the hand. But I don't have a problem with it being 240 if he always bets that amount. So.
All right, well, we get the next person out, and then the short stack of the table, which, you know, I don't like to mention names on the show too much, but this one is just beyond sick, isn't it?
I don't know.
Suck me dry, 69.
What the hell?
Somebody actually had to type that into their account when they created it, knowing that you can't change it. I wonder if it's still funny when he's 70.
It's kind of like tattoos.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if they're going to appreciate that that tattoo they got that has a skull and a snake going through its eyes on their arm when they're 70 and the nurse is taking care of them.
But, you know, seriously, let's be creative here. Jeez, I mean, even Beavis would say, that sucks.
He said, thucks.
All right, well, the short stack has 1175, and he makes the call. Another player out of the way. Looks like the small blind will call, and the big blind will call as well.
Wow.
So four of us going to the flop.
Yeah, we don't like that.
With the 960 in the pot.
Yep.
All right, well, I guess at this point, I mean, we tried to, I mean, it was really a steal attempt, but we, as we said, you know, if you get called, then you've got some opportunities with this hand. So you just got to be disciplined enough to get away from it or know what you're looking for, right?
Yeah, and know your players if you can at this point. You've been around for, what, one or two rotations, so maybe you get an idea of who's tight or not, but, I mean, one or two blind levels. But I don't know. I think that I'm still going to have to be aggressive with this hand no matter what the flop comes, just because I showed strength early on and I got a lot of people in the hand with me, and I have position on two of them, so yeah
but I guess my point is I think you, for most flops, you're gonna see bet here, but I think the problem here is people, you know, if they hit it like a nine,
yeah,
and nothing else really,
yeah,
that they end up going to the mat with this hand because they were the aggressor, and I think you need to be able to back off. I mean, still make your c bet, but if you get all over pressure after that, you're going to have to improve a little bit. I mean, we're playing this hand for a straight and secondarily for a flush.
Right.
We're really not playing for pairs here. So you just got to keep that in mind.
Yep.
All right. Well, the flop comes five of clubs, five of hearts, three of clubs.
Hmm.
So he had two clubs. Obviously, it's a weird board with his pair on there. Some small cards. Remember, both of our blinds are still in the hand. And the small blind checks, but the big blind bets 700, a little bit more than two-thirds of the pot, and it is on us.
Hmm. Very interesting. Trying to put people behind me, too. I got people to act and stuff. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to fold, although I at first I thought about folding, believe it or not. I know I got the draw, but really it's I would rather hit two pair or a straight draw here to make more disguised. But, I mean, I have nothing but a flush draw to a 10. Somebody easily could have been calling with a higher flush draw, and now they've bet it, you know. I don't know what to do here. I guess I would call. I don't think I would raise. I'm not going to make it 2,100 and bet 50% of my stack on a 10-high flush draw, you know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough to raise.
Yeah, so I think I'm just going to call and try to keep the pot relatively small.
Well, to be honest, I think it's a fascinating situation here, because, you know, if this guy has a five, common sense would say you wouldn't bet it now, but the best players play against common sense, so he could have a five. I mean, other than that, what does he have? You know, unless he's got a pair and just space and sort of thing. So we might not be ahead, but I mean, he may not be as strong as we think he could be, right? So I guess there's a case to be raised, but we only have 5K in our stack before we started this hand.
I don't know. Why don't you ask the dog in the background what he would do?
It's awesome. He's chasing the birds for me.
I think that, if the player was like a Doyle Brunson who says you always bet into a raiser when you flop set because you expect him to have a big hand, right, maybe that could be he has a five and that's what he's thinking. To me, it feels like it could be like sixes or a better flush draw. You know, like a pair that's not worth re-raising with, but when you see all unders to it, you're putting on your opponents as ace-king or something, so yeah, you bet out with sixes. So it could feel like a baby pair that's bigger than fives, or it could feel like a bigger flush draw. So I'm inclined to call and see what happens after that, and then maybe on the turn, if I hit my flush, then see what he does.
The other thing, too, is if we don't believe this guy and we want to say, hey, we got you beat and we raise, I mean, it's hard for us to represent a hand here as well, too. You know, 5-5 tray, unless we have a big pair.
Right.
So, I mean, you're almost tempting this guy to re-raise you again, and then you're in trouble. And I'm looking at what his stack was. He's the chip leader at the table, 5,400.
Yeah. And that's the last thing you want to do is raise here on a draw, or because you're trying to say that you had a pocket pair to get him off the hand. And then when he comes back over the top, you've lost half your stack because you can't call.
Right.
You know what I mean? With nothing. So I don't like that play at all. I think I would call or fold.
I could certainly defend folding here. You know, we took a shot on what seemed like a good spot to steal the blinds. Didn't work out. We only put 240 in. We're on a weak flush draw. That might not even be good if this guy has pocket trays or A6, a five with something else. I mean, there's no reason to put 700 in. So I could definitely defend that. And I think I could also defend a call here because, you know, hey, it's 700. It's less. I guess it's more than 10% of our stack, right? Take a shot. I mean, the big point that you mentioned is we got people behind us. I think we can kind of dismiss those.
Yeah.
Because the only person that hasn't acted yet in this hand is that truly juvenile guy who's a short stack. So the most he can raise it is another 400.
Right.
Or actually less than that because we already called a raise before that. So he's almost all in if he calls. And then we have the small blind who checked. Doesn't mean that they could be check raising, but less likely that they're going to call. So I'm not worried about a big raise behind me. Maybe you peel one off and see if you get the club. I guess I'd be worried after that point, though. Even if I hit my club, how strong do I feel I am?
Yeah.
And if I'm putting 700 in without really knowing where I'm at, what if the club gets there and the guy continues to bet into me?
Yeah.
Then I'm gonna have to go to the mat with a weak flush on a paired board.
I guess they have to figure out if this guy is betting that much with a draw, and we have a pit in our club and then he bets again, then we'll have to reassess. But I don't know. Let's see what happens. What did he do?
All right. He called.
Okay.
And our other two opponents get out of the way, so we're heads up now. 2360 in the pot. The turn is the four of diamonds. So again, it's five of clubs, five of hearts, three of clubs, four of diamonds.
Let me guess. It goes check, check. The only reason why I guess that is because any kind of bet here, we're folding. It's a hand of the week. So I'm assuming it goes check, check.
Well, obviously, we're ready, if he was playing some kind of straight draw, it got there, you know, ace, deuce, or a 6-7, which wouldn't make a lot of sense unless they were suited as well. The person who took the lead on the flop, our opponent bets 800, and we call.
Oh, no. No, I'm not calling now. I got one card left. There's no way I'm calling now. I'm done with it. The only way I would ever play this hand now is for a raise if I really, really believe the guy didn't have anything, and then just on sheer playing the player rather than that. It's the only way I could consider playing this hand again. I'm out of it. I'm folding.
Yeah, I mean, we're just bleeding our hand, our chip stack here at this point.
Yep.
All right, well, he saw something in it and called. The pot's now 3960.
Wow.
The river is the nine of diamonds.
Oh, man.
So our final board is five of clubs, five of hearts, three of clubs, four of diamonds, nine of diamonds.
Figures.
So, hey, we fall into a top pair.
Yeah.
On the river, and our opponent bets 1,000 to us.
Oh, man. Yeah, he keeps firing with overcard with the overcard, you know, and then even the four is an overcard to the three. So that didn't, you know, it's not like if he had threes here, he would have been maybe scared by the four or scared by the call, and he wasn't. It feels like it's a five, but it's so straightforward to being a five that why would it be hand of the week, you know?
Actually, it's interesting the bet sizing of our opponent, too. I mean, it was 700 on the flop when there's 960, so almost a pot size, or pretty close to a pot size.
Right.
And then it was 2360 on the turn, and he bets almost the same bet, 800.
And it's a third of the pot. So now, and then he gets to 1,000.
Now it's 4,000. Third of the pot. And again, he just ups it 2,000. So it almost seems like it's a bleeding me dry kind of.
Yeah,
it seems like he has the best hand. He's just trying to squeeze as much value out of us as he can.
It does feel that way. And it feels like he thinks we have a big enough hand to call, and he doesn't care because he's got three fives. Kind of feels like that. Again, we're not at the table playing it. It's strictly black and white here. But I guess I was folding on the turn, so I can't call. Even though I have top pair, I feel like I'm beat.
You know, what's tough here is you're right. I'm totally folding on the turn. I probably would have even folded on the flop. But this is the problem, is that when you make those calls and then you hit something on the river, I mean, can you fold now?
Yeah.
I mean, if you played it this way, this is kind of what you played it for, is you just don't think he had something, and now you actually have something of yourself. I would find it hard to fold now if I made those other two calls.
Well, I didn't call thinking he didn't have anything, though, calls. Right? You said it sounded like you called because you didn't think he had anything. I thought he had something. I just didn't. I thought that my hand would be good if I made it. I'm calling to make the big hand, not the pair. Yeah. I think I'm behind. I don't think I can. I mean, he could end up just showing something crappy like sixes and we win. But I feel like I need to get away from it earlier. But since I didn't, 3-1 on my, was it 3-1 on my money? Was it 3,000 or 4,000 out there?
4,000 in the pot, so 4-1.
So 4-1 on my money. God. So how much will we have left if we called? Can you tell me that? I can't remember.
Let's see. We have put about 1,700 in, and we started with 5,000. So.
So we'd have 33, and if we bet calls,
we'd have 23 left.
2,300 left, and the blinds are 50 and 100.
Yeah, so still plenty of play.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how you play your stack. I mean, for me, 2,300 at 5,100 is still fine.
Yeah.
You know, I can play that stack well. I'm not saying I'm willing to give up an extra 1,000, but that's what would leave me to say, hey, if I had made these calls, you know, an extra 1,000 to win 4,000. It's almost like a limit hand at this point for me.
Yeah, I think the dog is telling me to call, and I'm channeling Davey Berkowitz. So I'm gonna call, I guess. That's what I hated though, because this now costs me 1,800 more to find out that I lost the hand.
That's the ultimate lesson here too. Before we reveal what actually happened. I mean, this is what I was talking about from the beginning with 10-9. You know, it's a good spot to take a steal there. You have a bunch of folds in front of you. And if you get called and you got a hand that does stuff, the flop didn't really hit us. I mean, we had the flush draw, obviously, but it's not really exciting. We just need to get away from it, because if you don't, if you keep calling, this is the situation you find yourself in, where you almost have to talk yourself into making this crying call on the river and hoping it's right. And I hope it is right, but you know, this is what you get into when you start those hands and you can't get away from them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
Well, our hero does make the call.
Okay.
And our opponent shows 8 of hearts, 8 of diamonds.
Yeah.
And we drag a $6,000 pot with our nines and fives.
Yep, I would have been done with the hand, but I would have made the call at the end. So I guess that's justice there. But it did sound like, remember we were saying that it felt like sixes. Or a flush draw, the way he bet out into us like that. It felt like a little pair over
there. Yeah, certainly a small pair made sense. Yeah. I mean, you know, hey, there's no reason to raise from the big blind. When you have those many people in, you're set mining. And then you get a flop like this, you don't set mine. But, you know, hey, the next best thing to beat is two undercards and a paired board.
Yeah, and it makes sense, too, because he wouldn't have probably re-raised with eights, considering that you raised earlier. And then on the flop, he bets, and then he bets again because another under came.
Yep.
So it makes sense. And then on the
river.
And
on the river, you can't imagine someone sticking around with a nine.
Nine, yeah.
So, I mean, you still feel like your eights are gold there. So
I don't know if I would have. I might have check called that, though, if I was an eight. Just because if I'm calling all the way, as Big Guru did, I'm telling you that I have tens or better pre-flop raise, and I'm just calling you with my pot. You know what I mean? So when the 9 comes, I might have just checked. And
maybe.
Said,
I mean, again, it's a $4 sit and go. Yeah. You know, so I think some things change a little bit. I mean, I could see somebody playing this hand, Big Guru's hand with Ace King like that, just calling down, thinking my ace is good.
Yeah.
And I'd worried if I check on the river that he'd put in a big bet, and then I'd be stuck to making a bigger decision. I think I'd rather put the 1,000. It doesn't save him from raising, but I think probably it's almost like a blocking bet, a blocking value bet, if there is such a thing.
Yeah. Huh. Well, nice call, I guess.
Hey. Yeah.
Got lucky.
All right. Well, Victor has got plenty of swag, so we won't be sending him anything. But if you email your hand of the week to podcast@andyupmagazine.com or your situation of the week, we will send you something great like a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net.
Don't forget next week, St. Louis and Arizona road trip stories. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.